Thank you, Mark, and good afternoon once again. Also like to welcome all the visitors and everybody joining us on the Cybercast today. A few months ago, I had the opportunity to attend a conference on leadership here in Canton, where a number of leadership experts gave some presentations. And the keynote address was given by leadership expert John Maxwell. You may have heard of him, and I know my dad has mentioned him a number of times. John Maxwell is one of the foremost leadership experts in the world. And really what he and his organization have accomplished is very impressive. They have trained millions of leaders in literally every nation on earth. If you think about that, that's an amazing, very impressive accomplishment. You know, he's a very engaging, very charismatic speaker. It's fun to listen to him. He inspires you to action. And what I like is that he gives, you know, specific practical steps on how you can develop better leadership. But you know, his basic premise is, and has been for a long time, is that leadership is influence. Leadership is influence. Nothing more, nothing less. You know, it has nothing to do with your position. You don't have to be in charge. You don't have to be the boss to be a leader. Everyone can be a leader. Or let me restate that. Everyone is a leader, even if we don't do it intentionally. When we influence others, we've just exercised leadership. Do you ever stop and think about how much of an impact we have in the lives of others? Do you ever stop to think about that? You know, a small action that takes just a few seconds or a few minutes can have a great impact on someone else. For example, if someone cuts us off in traffic and gives us a signal with one finger that we're number one, that can put a damper on your whole day, can't it? Took just a couple seconds, but it can really influence us, can it? You know, on the flip side, we can have a tremendously positive impact on people as well. You know, again, I think many times we underestimate how much of an impact we really can have on others, or we do have, whether we realize it or not. Not too long ago, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who related a story to me. He said he had an acquaintance that bumped into a friend one day at a coffee shop. You know, just happened to meet. They hadn't seen each other for a while. Just struck up a quick conversation, you know, about this or that, how things were going. And this acquaintance of my friend happened to mention in the course of this conversation, you know, thanks for being my friend. You mean a lot to me. It's really good to see you again. And they left. Conversation ended. They went their ways. Didn't think anything of it. And yet he didn't realize what impact he'd had on his friend. You see, his friend was going through a difficult time in his life. He was depressed. He was down. He felt like he didn't matter to anyone. And he was even considering ending his life. That simple little statement by his friend helped him turn his mindset around and move in a positive direction in his life. He later came back and told his friend just how much of an impact that short conversation had. And he thanked him for it. You know, his friend was shocked. He had no idea what kind of an impact he'd had on his friend. That's leadership, brethren. We are all leaders, whether we realize it or not. Every time we influence somebody, both positively and negatively, we're leaders. Think about some of the examples in the Bible for a second. Was Joseph a great leader? I think we'd all agree he was. But when he was sold into slavery Was he the boss? You know, was he in a position of authority? He didn't have any authority. He didn't have any rights. He was a slave. He was property. But yet he exerted great influence on those around him by living according to God's law. And he had such an impact in Potiphar's house that he was eventually put into a leadership position there. You know, still a slave, but he had a position of authority then. But he didn't start leading once he had that position or that title. It started long before that. He had positive influence on those around him. Then, of course, you know, he had the episode with Potiphar's wife. Made the right decision. Got thrown in jail for it. So here he was, a slave and imprisoned. It really doesn't get any lower than that as far as authority goes, right? But he did the same thing. He was living the right way. He influenced people in a positive way by living according to God's law, and once again was eventually able to be in a leadership role there. And of course, we know how the story ends. You know, he ended up being one of the most powerful people in the world at that time with Pharaoh. What about Daniel and his friends? Remember that story? Remember how they didn't compromise even though they were captives in a foreign land? Again, kind of a similar situation, if you think about it. They had no rights, no authority. But one of the very first things they did was convince the king's chief eunuch to not make them eat the king's food. They didn't want to eat unclean foods. That was influence without being in a position of authority. Brethren, we're all leaders whether we realize it and recognize it or not. And how we affect others is obviously important, isn't it? But you know what I find really interesting about these leadership principles? John Maxwell didn't invent them. The leadership principles that really work, they come from God, and they're found here in the Bible. You ever notice that? And that's certainly not taking anything away from John Maxwell. In fact, he would agree with that. True wisdom, brethren, true wisdom, true knowledge only comes from God. Let's just begin in Proverbs 2, because this is really important to understand, an important foundation. This ties into what Mitch was talking about. You have to have accurate statements or conditionals and then conclusions, or it doesn't work. And God's true wisdom is the only source of good, true wisdom that is correct. Let's notice Proverbs 2, verses 6 and 7. Proverbs 2, verses 6 and 7. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. Brethren, God gives wisdom. True wisdom comes from God. That's the source. So we always need to be looking and watching and making sure that our knowledge, our truth, is based on the knowledge and the true wisdom that comes from God. What about the flip side? What's the other side of the coin? Well, when you ignore God, when you don't base, you know, your wisdom, your truth on him, it doesn't work out so well, does it? Proverbs 14:12 says that there's a way that seems right to a man. But we know what the conclusion of that is, don't we? That way ends in death. It doesn't work. Without God's truth to guide us, brethren, it is inevitable to go astray. It's a foregone conclusion. We cannot do it without God's true wisdom to guide us. I like Psalm, or the 14th Psalm in the first verse, where it says, "The fool has said in his heart that there is no God." You ever heard that statement lately? There's no God. There's no such thing as God. You know, we hear it more and more in our society. And the reality is that when you remove true wisdom that comes from God, the result is foolishness. That's just the logical conclusion. That's what happens. Let's notice James 3 as we continue building here. James 3, because here it's very clear where worldly wisdom originates. And again, if we don't have God's true wisdom in our lives guiding us, that vacuum is replaced with worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom, and we know where that comes from. Let's notice James chapter 3, verse 14. James chapter 3, verse 14. Actually, we'll start in verse 13. We'll read 13 through 15. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. For this wisdom does not descend from above. You know, this isn't godly wisdom, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But, verse 17, the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceful, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. You see that stark contrast, brethren? The wisdom that doesn't come from above, i.e. wisdom that doesn't come from God, it comes from Satan, and there's nothing good that comes out of it. The end of that road is death. So, brethren, we must continually evaluate what we see, what we hear, and what we think to make sure that it aligns with true wisdom, wisdom that comes from God, you know, as described here in His Word, in the Bible. And as our society departs further and further from the truth, we have to be increasingly vigilant, brethren, because the danger is that we'll let those ideas start creeping into our thoughts and have an influence on us. We can't let that happen. You know, there's a local organization down in my area, down in the Berlin, Ohio area, that works with John Maxwell. And I'm friends with the founder and his family. They're a nice family. I enjoy spending time with them. And they go all over the world teaching people values-based leadership. You can guess where the values come from. They come from the Bible. But you know what their strategy is? What they do is they purposefully repackage godly values, true values, true wisdom from the Bible, and they repackage it into something that sounds modern and secular. You know, so they basically change the lingo around so that it sounds, you know, modern and new and not connected with the Bible at all. And the reason for that is because they know if they come in with a religious sounding message, they will be rejected before they're even at the door. Nobody wants to hear religious-sounding, you know, Bible-based instruction and values, it seems like. But you know what's fascinating to me? They've been incredibly successful with this. Very secular people just, you know, they lap up these values in this training program that they've got. And they literally travel all over the world and meet with people to, you know, explain things like honesty, for example. It seems like a really basic, you know, principle. But they repackage it into ways that people just, they really embrace it. They've met with drug lords in prison in Mexico and have had discussions with these people about, you know, these type of values with great success. Brethren, people in this world are starving. They're literally starving for true godly values. And that gives us a great opportunity to be leaders by influencing people in a positive way in this world in which we live. So getting back to this conference, I wanted to talk a little bit about what Mr. Maxwell's latest book is about. And again, I think my dad might have mentioned this before, but his latest book is called Intentional Living. Intentional living, what does that mean? Well, I think everybody's heard the phrase or the term that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You ever heard that? Well, basically the premise behind it is you're on this road that's leading to a bad place and you have really good intentions of changing and doing something better. You just never do. You just keep on trucking. And that's really the kind of the crux of what he's getting at with this concept. Most people have good intentions, brethren. Most people really do have good intentions. But very few of them translate that into good actions. That's the problem. All the good intentions in the world really don't mean anything if you don't put that into action. So intentional living is when you consistently, every day, think about what you want to do and then do it. Every single day. Not once a week, not 2 days a week. Every single day. He related this to us. He said, and people come up and ask him, well, what does every day really mean? And he just had to laugh. That's one of those that should be very obvious. It really means what he says. It means every day. What about birthdays? What about holidays? Are those days? Yep. Do what you set out to do every single day. Brethren, there's nothing in life worth having that comes easily. Nothing. Everything requires a lot of work. So today, brethren, I want to challenge us to be intentional Christians. Intentional Christians. Brethren, something we need to focus on, decide to do, but most importantly, and above all else, we then have to do it every day. Brethren, it doesn't happen by accident. We can't be accidental Christians, because that doesn't work. It must be intentional. We have to be intent on what we want to do and decide what that is and then do it. Every day. Let's notice James. We're in James. Let's go back to chapter 1. Because again, this concept isn't new, brethren. This concept comes straight out of the Bible. Let's notice what James says in chapter 1, verses 21 through 25. James 1, 21. Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. But, notice verse 22, but be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. Be doers. Brethren, that's really the key. We have to be doers. 23, for if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in a mirror, for he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man that he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, does it, continues in it, and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does. Brethren, we have to be doers every day. Every day. Let's notice chapter 2 and verse 17. Very familiar scripture. Thus, also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Brethren, good intentions without following through with actions are useless. They're dead, as James describes it here. If we don't follow that up with action, it's useless. Let me mention something that he mentioned in this seminar. He called it the rule of five. Ever heard of the rule of five? It goes like this. If I have a tree in my backyard that shouldn't be there, and have an axe, if I consistently swing that axe five times every day, I start and the next day I go out, I do the same thing. I swing 5 times, and the day after, if I consistently do that every day, what's going to happen to that tree? What do you think? It's going to fall over. If it's a small tree, it might not take very long. If it's a big tree, it might take a while, right? The point is, if we consistently every day work at the task that we'd like to accomplish, we'll accomplish it. John Maxwell has written 102 books. That's a lot of writing. People ask him, how in the world did you write 102 books? How did you do that? He says, it's simple. He didn't write them all at once. He says he wrote or writes 1 page at a time every day. Every day he writes. Every single day. Doesn't matter if it's his birthday or a holiday or he's on vacation. Doesn't matter. Every day he finds some time. Maybe it's not a lot, but he'll find some time to write. That's what he does. That's what he enjoys. He's intent on doing that. Brethren, there's a lot to learn from this rule of five if you think about it. The first is, you have to have a good intention. You have to have a true intention. That's the first thing. You know, if your intention is to rob a bank, and you're really diligent, you might accomplish that. But obviously that's not a good outcome, right? You have to be focused on the correct goal. I think that's obvious. Second thing is, you need the right tool. You know, you need an axe if you're wanting to cut down a tree. If you go out and you're super diligent about hitting the tree with a baseball bat, you might damage the tree a little bit, but you're not going to accomplish your goal without the right tool. But brethren, the most important part is being intentional and diligent at working on it every day. Following through and completing whatever you've set your mind to every day. If we don't, then having a perfect intention, a really, really good goal, and having the perfect tool for the job, you know, let's say you have this massive chainsaw, if you're not diligent in following through and doing what you intend to do, it won't happen. It'll be completely meaningless and useless, having that good intention, if we don't follow through. So what do we need to do as intentional Christians? What do we need to do? Let's take a look at how Jesus summed it up back in Matthew 22. Matthew chapter 22. And we'll start in verse 34. And again, my intention here is to just kind of give a high-level view of these items, because I don't want you to miss the point. I want it to be very clear. The point of what I'm saying is, we have to do it. We have to be an intentional Christian every single day. Every day. Continually work on it. Let's notice verse 34, Matthew 22, 34. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. One of them, being a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" You know, nothing's changed. They were still trying to be sneaky back then. They were trying to get him to trip up by saying that, you know, a certain little part of the law is the most important, therefore minimizing the others and getting him into all kinds of trouble. But of course, we know Jesus knew their intentions and answered by summarizing God's law into basically two segments. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment." So, brethren, as intentional Christians, the first part of what we need to be intentional on, focus on, and then do every day is to love God. Love God. So how do we do that, brethren? How do we do that? Brother, we do it by obeying Him, keeping His commandments, and by building a relationship with Him. Brethren, God called us out of this world to offer us a relationship with Him. And He showed us His great plan of salvation for all mankind. You know, a plan that will include everyone, give everyone a chance at salvation. He wants a relationship with us. Again, I think we know what we need to do. My point again is trying to be very clear. Is we need to do it every day. Let's notice then in 1 John chapter 5, we need to obey God. Let's notice 1 John chapter 5. And we'll notice verse 3 where it talks about how we love God. What is the love of God? 1 John 5, verse 3. For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. Brother, we need to obey God. That's how we show love to God. But why? You know, does God just want us to obey Him just because? Just to see if we'll do it? Does He want us to be miserable? No, we know the answer. If we keep reading, it says, and His commandments are not burdensome. Brethren, God's commandments are for our own good. They're a blessing. They show us the right way to live, and the results are good. Good fruits come from keeping God's commandments. And they show us the right way to live. But brethren, we actually have to keep God's commandments. Not just on the Sabbath. Not just, you know, 2 or 3 days a week when we kind of happen to think about them. No, brethren, we must be intentional about keeping God's commandments every day. We can't be part-time Christians. That just doesn't work. We have to be intentional and focus on and do and keep God's commandments every day. And we'll be better off for it. That's the beauty of it. They show us the right way to live. And building on that, you know, we need to have a relationship with God. And we know that one consistent theme that we see, whether it's in the Old Testament or the New Testament, is that, you know, the great people of God were very consistent in prayer. You ever notice that? To build a relationship with anyone, or building a relationship with God, there has to be communication, and we do that through prayer. If you want to know, 1 Thessalonians 5:17, Paul says to pray without ceasing. And we're establishing and building a relationship with God. But what I wanted to highlight is two people of the Old Testament. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 6. So again, my point today is that we have to focus and do these things every day. You know, this is one of the famous stories of the Old Testament. Daniel gets thrown into the lion's den. And we know the story. I don't want to go into all the details, but we know that, you know, some of the other rulers who, I guess they were jealous of Daniel and his position and what he was able to accomplish and the favor that he had. You know, they had the king implement this law where you could only worship the king for a certain period of time. And what did Daniel do? He could have easily gone and said, okay, for this period of time, I'll pray, but I'm going to do it in private. I'll do it in my closet, nobody will know, and then once things have cleared up, I'll go back to my tradition. But that's, again, what I want to focus on. Let's notice in verse 10, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. You notice what it said? 3 times. Daniel prayed 3 times. every day. How we know that? Let's finish. As was his custom since early days. Brethren, Daniel knew how important his relationship with God was. He was an intentional follower of God. He prayed 3 times a day, every day, since he was very young. It says since his early days. 3 times every day. And even when his life was in jeopardy, and he knew he was going to get thrown into the den of lions because the law couldn't be changed, even the king couldn't change it, he didn't back down. He was intentional about building and maintaining that relationship with God. Let's notice another very famous person. Let's notice David in Psalm 55. What did David do? We know he had a very close relationship with God, a man after God's own heart. Let's notice Psalm 55, verses 16 and 17. As for me, I will call upon God, and the Lord shall save me. Verse 17, evening and morning and at noon, I will pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. This is just one example, but you can see here that David did the same thing. 3 times per day, he prayed to God. I'm sure when he got himself into the jams he got himself into, he did a lot more than that as well. But you can see that, you know, David, just like Daniel, was very intentional about maintaining that relationship with God, maintaining that communication line with God. What about you? What about me? You know, if we're honest, it's easy to get caught up in the hustle and bustle of life. Things happen. Seems like life moves faster and faster, doesn't it? And it's easy to get distracted. And before we know it, a day's gone by and, oh, we forgot to pray. Brother, we can't let that happen. We have to be intentional about being a Christian, or in this case, be intentional about communicating with God, praying with God every day, consistently, without fail. And that's how we build a really close relationship with Him. And the same thing applies to Bible study and meditation. We know that all Scripture is inspired by God. We know that God's Word is sharper than any two-edged sword. It's Hebrews 4:12. But guess what? How good is a sword if you don't know it? If we don't know the Word of God, then that's useless to us, right? If we don't use it and understand it, we have to know it. While we're here in Psalm, let's jump over to Psalm 119. And again, we'll see David's perspective. We'll first read verse 15, Psalm 119, 15, and then we'll jump back further in this long psalm. Psalm 119 and verse 15. I will meditate on your precepts and contemplate your ways. I will delight myself in your statutes. I will not forget your word. And David thought about, he contemplated God's ways, his laws, his way of life. And when did he do this? Let's notice verse 97, here in the same psalm. Turn back to Psalm 119, verse 97. Oh, how I love your law. And it's no secret, David loved God's law, just like we should. It is my meditation all the day. All day. Again, not just once a week when we meet at church. Not twice a week we happen to think about it, brother. We need to think about and study God's law every day. Every day. To build that relationship. One final psalm while we're here in Psalm. Let's go to Psalm 63. And I want to focus on these examples because it's very clear, brethren. Daniel, David, some of the other people that we read about in the Bible, they had great relationships with God because they were intentional about doing and building the relationship, doing what God wanted them to do, following His way of life every day without fail. Psalm 63 and verse 6 says, Psalm 63 verse 6, "When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches. Because you have been my help, therefore, in the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice." When David was lying in bed, you know, ready to fall asleep, what was he doing? He would meditate and think about God, think about His way of life, think about His laws. Brother, what do we think about in our downtime? When we're relaxing, or maybe when we're driving in the car, or whenever we have some free time. I'd encourage each and every one of us to be an intentional Christian and try and keep God and His Word in our minds. We need to be thinking about it, trying to understand it even better every day. Every day. So that's one half of what Jesus was talking about in Matthew there. But let me get back to something else that John Maxwell talked about at this seminar. He made this statement, and I thought it was very interesting. He said, "Success is about us. Significance is about others." Let's think about that. Success is about us. Significance is about others. Yeah, that makes sense when you think about it. If you're successful, what are you doing? You're accomplishing something of yourself, or you're, you know, reaching a position, or, you know, whatever that target might be. It's usually about us, about whatever, you know, I want to do for me. It should be really clear that, you know, success, as we see it in this world, doesn't necessarily make you happy, you know, and give you a fulfilling life. You know, all you have to do is look at the rich and the famous, you know, whether it's actors or athletes or whatever. I mean, many of them are miserable. They can't hold relationships together for any period of time at all. You know, addiction is rampant. Why? Brethren, success, when we're focused on something for ourselves, it's about us. Significance is about others. Thus, if we want to live a life of significance, we need to add value to others. We need to add value to others. That sound familiar? It should. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 22. And we'll go back to where we just were and look at what Jesus said was the other half of the commandments in summary. Let's notice Matthew 22:39. "And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." You see what Mr. Maxwell did there? He said to lead a life of significance, we need to add value to others. That sounds nice and modern and secular, doesn't it? What does it really mean? Love your neighbors. Brethren, the values that work come out of the Bible. True wisdom comes from God. So the second part to pleasing God and to being an intentional Christian is to love others, show love towards others. And again, my point today is not to describe what we should do, because I think we have a good understanding of that. The point is, we need to do it. Let me give you the 5 points that John Maxwell pointed out in how to live a life of significance. Again, in other words, how do you love your neighbor as yourself? Here are his 5 steps, and I think there's a lot of value to them. First one is, I value people. We need to value people. Why? Well, we all want to be valued, don't we? That's one of those basic human needs that everyone has. Everybody wants to feel valued. And if we value others, that'll automatically make us want to love them. You know, Jesus said we need to not only love our neighbors, but also love our enemies. Boy, that's a really tough one. But if we actually value other people and value everyone like we should, it's really hard. But if we do, that's what enables us to want to love them, even if, you know, they haven't been nice to us or whatever the case might be. So point one is to value people. And the second point is to think of ways to add value to people. Seems kind of basic, doesn't it? But think about it. Before you can actually do something, you first have to think about some way to do it, right? You know, who am I going to meet today? Who am I going to see? Every day, he thinks of ways of how he could add value to people that he encounters. He put it this way, thinking on the front end means that you prepare. You know, if you think beforehand, you're preparing. If you're thinking on the back end, you repair. If you're not preparing, if you're not thinking ahead, you're going to have to be fixing. So again, it's really important to think of ways that we can love others every day. Because if we don't even think about it, we will certainly not do it, brethren. Point three, after we've thought about ways to look to add value, or in other words, to love our neighbor, then we have to look for ways to add value to people. So that means when we're, you know, living our daily lives, we need to be on the lookout. How can I add value to other people? First, I have to think about it. Then I have to look for ways to add value. And then, of course, the logical next step is to then do it. Do things to add value to people. And that's the most important step, brethren. You actually have to do it. Valuing people, thinking about ways to value people, looking for ways to add value to people is all totally useless and meaningless if we then don't follow through and do it and show love to others. And then his fifth step is he encourages others to do the same. We should encourage all of us, each and every one of us, we should encourage each other and the people we encounter to do the same, to add value, to show love to people. You know, it's never too early to start. Even little children understand this concept, brethren. John Maxwell told a story of his little grandson. He's 9 or 10 years old. He's a little kid. And he'd been explaining this concept to the family, and, you know, they talk about it. You know, how can we find ways to add value to people? So one day, his grandson told him, "Today I'm going to hold doors open for everybody I meet and smile at them." I guess they were going out shopping. You know, they were doing some activity where they were out at a, you know, mall or someplace like that. This little 9-year-old, what was he doing? He was thinking about ways to add value to people. At the end of the day, he called Grandpa up. He said, "Grandpa, guess what? Today I held the door for 40 people. 40 people. Brethren, that little 9-year-old boy had a positive impact on the lives of 40 people in one day. Just because he thought about a way that he could add value to people, i.e. show love to others. But you know what? What was more important is that he did it. He went out and he held the door and smiled to 40 people. You know, wherever he was, at a mall or whatever, wherever he was at. He followed through with action. He did something about it. Brethren, we must do the same. We must be intentional Christians and find ways to love others every day. Whether it's encouraging someone, praying for someone, or, you know, helping somebody do something. Again, my point is not to describe what we should do. I think we all know that. The point is we have to do it every day. Let's notice Matthew 25, just a few chapters after Matthew 22, where we're at. And we'll start concluding here. Matthew 25, And we'll start in verse 31. Let's notice what the key here is to this parable. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory, and all the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats. And he will set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. We know the story. We're not going to read all of these verses. What's the key? What's the conclusion? What was the deciding factor or the differentiation between the sheep and the goats? Let's notice verse 39. Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the sheep are asking, what are you talking about? Verse 40. And the king will answer and say to them, Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me. What's the key word there? The sheep did something. They followed good intentions up with action. And you know what? They didn't even realize it. They did something. They were intentional Christians. They did something with intent and then did it every day. Every day. Brethren, we must find ways to love God and love others and then do it every day. Every day. Let's conclude in James chapter 4. James 4, and we'll start in verse 13. James 4:13. Come now, you who say, Today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, If the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance, for all such boasting is evil. What does verse 17 say? Therefore, to him who knows to do good, and does not do it, to him it is sin. Well, what's James talking about here, brethren? What's he talking about? Brethren, he's talking about procrastination. He's talking about procrastination. You know, that reminds me, I think we've probably all seen those motivational posters. You know, some people have them in their offices or whatever that you say, you know, a good attitude or whatever. They have a nice picture and a nice little saying. Well, you know what I like? I like the demotivational posters because they're very sarcastic. There's one on procrastination, and it says, Why do today what you can put off till tomorrow? I just think that one's awesome. I need to get that thing. But again, that's what James is talking about here, brethren. If we know that we should do something, don't put it off till tomorrow. Just do it. Just do it. The issue is, brethren, we don't have control over what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, just like you said there in verse 13, we can make big plans. And okay, next year we're going to do this and do that. And we should. We need to plan. That's not the point. The issue is we don't have control over it. We don't know whether that's actually going to happen or not. What we can control is what we do right now. Right? We can control what we can do right now. So, brethren, I challenge all of us to be intentional Christians. You have to understand what to do. Think about how we can do it. But most important, we have to do it. We have to actually do it every day.